Good afternoon. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this week on the Ideas Network. War and Peace, Leo Tolstoy's 1,500-page dreadnought of a novel, has been widely acclaimed as one of the best ever written. Have you read it? Perhaps its length or the fact that it has some 600 characters or that it's about Russia in the early 19th century might have kept you from adding it to your reading list, whatever the reason. My guest this hour thinks you should reconsider Tolstoy's arguably most famous work. He has a lot to teach us in War and Peace, does Leo Tolstoy, if we just give him a chance. My guest is Dr. Andrew Kaufman, an award-winning teacher of Russian language, literature, and culture. He's an internationally recognized Tolstoy scholar who has spent the last 20 years teaching Russian classics. He is currently a lecturer in Slavic languages and literatures at the University of Virginia. He's also the creator of the Books Behind Bars program. And he's the author of Give War and Peace a Chance, Tolstoyan Wisdom for Troubled Times, published by Simon & Schuster. Dr. Kaufman, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Thank you for having me.
So you went to college as a youth to pursue studies in economics or political science. So how in the world did you end up in Russian literature?
Well, actually, it was my parents initially suggested I start learning Russian in high school at a local college because Gorbachev had just come into power and there were, you know, opportunities opening up in Russia. So I thought I was going to go into business or something economics related. But I got to college and I discovered that my real love of Russia was in the arts and the culture and the literature. And I discovered that for the first time when I was a sophomore and I took a survey of 19th century Russian literature class. And somehow the professor thought it would be a good idea to assign the world's most intimidating novel within the first 3 weeks of the semester. And of course, I was terrified, like most readers. And the novel, of course, is War and Peace. But my terror was quickly replaced with a sense, as I started reading this book, it seduced me. Tolstoy's incredibly lifelike world. These were characters that I had met. You know these characters. You recognize these situations. Tolstoy's ability to bring you into life as we actually experience it is unsurpassed in literature. And then the other aspect of this book that really started to speak to me were the characters like Pierre Bezukhov, Prince Andrei Bolkonsky, who are asking the big questions. I was 20 years old at the time. I was going through a very transitional period in my life. And Pierre Bezukhov in the novel is also 20 years old when the book opens, and he is thrown into a Russian society that is rapidly changing. So I saw a lot of myself in this character and in all of these characters, and I realized that my own personal quest, you know, in many ways is mirrored and it can be deepened by by understanding the journeys of Tolstoy's characters.
I realize that we only have about 50 minutes to do this, so asking you to summarize the plot of War and Peace for those who haven't read it seems like a really absurd thing to do, but I'm rather known for that. So even just reading your book, it seems silly to even ask, what's this book about? But what was Tolstoy's idea when he went into this? He did have some kind of a plan, but as you point out in the book, planning is great. Plans really don't generally work out.
So in answer to your first question about the plot, at the simplest level, this is a book that takes place roughly between 1805 and 1812, and then the epilogue goes another 7 years. But the focus of the book is during those 7 years of Russia's wars with Napoleon, and it eventually describes Napoleon's failed invasion of Russia in 1812. And the interest of the plot is in the stories of characters who are five families, essentially five major families who go through this tumultuous time, and we watch their journeys. We watch them go up and down, and we watch the way in which history throws them around, in the ways in which they make decisions about everything from how to raise a family to how to survive in a war-torn country. And so, essentially, that is the focus: these individual characters from those five core families that are living in a tumultuous time.
So War and Peace was your introduction to Tolstoy. You hadn't read any other Tolstoy before that.
I had read some Tolstoy. For instance, when I was in high school, I had read a short story called The Death of Ivan Ilyich, about a middle-aged man who contracts a fatal illness and has to come to terms with how he lived. But it was only, you know, tangential. It was not something that I was seriously interested in until I discovered War and Peace in college.
What is it that separates Tolstoy from the other great Russian writers?
Well, it's a great question. I think one of the aspects of his writing that many readers respond to is the incredible lifelikeness of his characters, and his world. Tolstoy was the greatest of all of the Russian realists. His ability to depict life as we experience it moment to moment, the details, the sights, the sounds, the little gestures that people make, the little unspoken thoughts that they have. Tolstoy captures all of this in a way that no other Russian writer succeeded at that level. And then the other thing that makes War and Peace unique, not only in Russian literature, but in all of world literature, is this book revolutionized the European novel. Tolstoy attempted to pack in more life in the pages of this book than any novelist had ever attempted to do before. As you pointed out, 361 chapters, nearly 600 characters. The American writer and critic Henry James called Tolstoy a, quote, monster harnessed to his great subject, all of human life. And so it's that sense that he wanted to capture nothing less than the totality of human experience. Anything that a human being has ever felt, thought, experienced, he wanted it in his book. And that is a bold ambition that no other writer, Russian or otherwise, has attempted or succeeded in executing.
How long did it take him to complete this work?
Well, when he sat down to actually start writing it in 1863, so he started in 1863 and he finished in 1869. So it took him 6 years. And keep in mind, he had a very privileged life. He was an aristocrat. He was independently wealthy. He had people taking care of him and his children, and he had an incredibly supportive wife who actually copied out the novel 7 times. It was the best conditions of life that allowed him, you know, to literally work at his leisure all day long for 6 years. But the idea started gestating a little bit earlier than that in the late 1850s. And let me just say that the idea originally that Tolstoy had was he wanted to write a book about the 1850s in Russia through the lens of a returning political prisoner, a Decembrist, who was returning to Russia after 25 years of exile in Siberia, and to let readers see the world, the changed Russia, through that character's eyes. Well, then he realized that in order to describe the 1850s in Russia, he had to go back to 1825, which was a seminal year of the Decembrist uprising against Nikolai I, the Tsar Nikolai I. And then he said, well, wait, I can't describe 1825 unless I go back to 1812, which is the year of Napoleon's failed invasion of Russia, which was a seminal event as well. And then he said, oh, but wait, I can't describe that unless I go back to 1805. So if he hadn't stopped at 1805, you know, War and Peace would have been 15,000 pages long instead of 1,500.
We have that to be grateful for then. Before we go any further, I want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. Have you read War and Peace? What did you think? Thinking about the book, if you've read it, how does it describe a time that's similar to the one we're living in? And we'll be discussing that as we go along here. But give us a call. Let us know what you think. Have you not read it? Why haven't you read it? Have you thought about it? And then you looked at it and you said, holy cow, I could never take that on. 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. It's a toll-free number. Good. Pretty much anywhere you can hear the program. You can also reach us via email. talk@wpr.org is the email address. And you can join us on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page and leave a comment or question there. So, War and Peace, in your book, you draw parallels between the period of time Tolstoy is writing about and today's world. Let's talk about that for just a moment. What are the similarities between the world that Tolstoy describes and the one that we're living in here in the 21st century?
Well, I think the best way to answer that is just to give you an example from my own life, which was really the impetus behind this book. It was 2008. I happened to be rereading War and Peace at that time because I was working on another book about Tolstoy, believe it or not, that was published in 2011. And it was the time of the financial crisis in our country. And I learned that my family and I had just gone through a very serious crisis, financial crisis of our own. For the details of that, the listeners will have to read the book. But suffice it to say that it was a big enough crisis in my life that it felt as if the bottom had dropped out, as if some of my most fundamental assumptions about the world, about my place in the world, about my security, my happiness, that all of those things were challenged. And I realized at that time that that's what War and Peace is about. This is a book about a society of people who are going through a crisis, whose lives are being turned upside down by war and social change and in many cases, financial challenges. And so War and Peace, I realized, is the classic for our time, because characters in this book, like many of us today, like I certainly was in 2008, are asking the question, how do I find fulfillment and even happiness in such troubled times? That's one of the key questions that Tolstoy's characters grapple with in War and Peace, and I think it's one that many of us today can relate to.
800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our program. Let us know if you've read this book or not and how it affected you. Have you read it more than once? I know a lot of times when we find a book we really like, many of us will read it more than once. Some people refuse to do that. I know in my own case, if I find a book, I don't keep a book if I don't think I'm going to read it more than once. Dr. Kaufman, how many times have you read War and Peace? Have you lost count?
About 15. And if I had known when I first read it back in, when I was a sophomore in college that I would eventually be writing a book about it, I would have counted exactly how many times. But it's about 15 times. Every couple of years or so, I rediscover the book. And like you said, it becomes a new book every time. This book has grown with me. I have a relationship with it. In fact, on the cover of my book, people ask me, where does that picture come from? The picture of the book that looks like War and Peace that's been through the war. Well, that's my copy of War and Peace that I've had with me for several years. And that's a book that has been loved and engaged with and lived through. And so every time it changes, it's a new book. It comes alive in new ways depending on what I'm going through at that time in my life. And that's what a great book can do. It's a book you can have a relationship with. It's a book that changes as you change, that grows as you grow. And I salute you, John, for only reading books that you know you're going to read more than once.
Well, I only keep them, and the others I give away or dispose of. But yeah, I like to own books. I'm not a great user of the library, and I don't have anything against libraries, but I like to own the things I'm reading, so that if I happen to spill my coffee or something on them, then I don't have to worry about that. But that's just me, and we don't need to be talking about my idiosyncratic behavior. Let's go to the phones. We have a caller in Appleton. Carol joins us. Carol, thanks for being here today.
I am just astonished that people are not reading War and Peace all the time. It's a wonderful book. I have read it many times, and I can't believe that there are people out there who have not. It's astonishing. How could you ever get out of high school or college without reading War and Peace? And your guess is absolutely correct. One grows with this book, and every so often you have to read it to reconnect with those characters and to understand what they're doing and figure out what your world is like compared to theirs. And I do have a question for your guest, and that is, which translation do you like best?
So it's a great question. Let me preface my answer by saying that I tell readers that if they read the first five pages of a translation and they think that it's a translation that's going to make them want to read War and Peace from beginning to end, then that's the one that they should choose, no matter what I recommend, because ultimately the goal, and different readers respond to different translations. However, the one that I have found that I base my translations on in my book and that I've found many readers have responded to is the one by Richard Pevere and Larisa Valachonsky. who is a pair of translators who have translated many of the Russian classics. And what they do a brilliant job of, in my view, in their translation of War and Peace, is that they capture that combination of elegance and awkwardness that is part of Tolstoy's style. Some of the earlier translations only capture the elegance. Only they try to turn Tolstoy into a kind of domesticated Victorian writer. But Tolstoy's vision and his writing style in War and Peace is much quirkier than that, is much bolder and in some ways very awkward. He'll repeat sentences within a single paragraph. He'll repeat entire phrases. He'll, you know, 2.5% of the book happens to be in French, including the opening. And so Pavir and Volokhonsky do a good job of keeping all of those kind of bold, quirky elements of the text while also, capturing the elegance of the narrative as well.
Carol, thanks so much for that call. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with more about Give War and Peace a Chance, Tolstoyan Wisdom for Troubled Times by Andrew Kaufman. We have Dr. Kaufman with us today. When we come back, I'd like to maybe get into some of the specifics of the things that you think Tolstoy can teach us, and maybe as a way to preface that, you can talk about Tolstoy as a teacher, because he set up a school, he did spend time as a teacher, and he learned a lot from his students, as you point out, and I'd like us to maybe get into that a little bit, because that was particularly fascinating to me when I was looking at this. So, lots more, and your questions as well. Feel free to take this discussion of War and Peace wherever you'd like to, listeners. 800-642-1234. If you read the book, what did you learn from it? What life lessons do you think may be applicable today from this work? At 800-642-1234. That's a different number than the one we normally have for this program, which is why I'm repeating it ad nauseum. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is the email address, and you can always find us on Facebook. Look for the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Kathleen Dunn Show on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn this week. We're talking about the book Give War and Peace a Chance, Tolstoyan Wisdom for Troubled Times by Andrew Kaufman, who's my guest this hour. And we're wondering what you think about War and Peace. What did you learn from it? 800-642-1234. So Tolstoy, you say, has a lot to teach us in this novel, and I want to get into what you think that is. But first, talk about Tolstoy, the teacher. He did. He set up a school on his lands for the peasants in his area. Mm-hmm. He taught children. What was it about teaching that appealed to him? And what did he learn from working with these students?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's many readers don't know this, but War and Peace almost never happened because Tolstoy was so interested in teaching. He had given up on writing fiction in the early 1860s. He got married in 1862, and he settled down on his estate. And he thought his true calling in life was to be a teacher. And so he, as you mentioned, he set up a school for the peasant children, the children of the peasants that worked on his estate and in the neighboring areas. And he wanted to teach them in a way that he thought, you know, was they were not being taught elsewhere. His philosophy was leave the children alone. It's a very radical vision of education, an almost anarchistic vision. But he did not agree with the hierarchical kinds of education that he saw in the schools at the time. He took a tour of Europe, in fact, in Germany, and met various educators there to study what they were doing. And he thought all of them, or most of them, had missed the boat. That what you want to do as a teacher is elicit from students their deepest, truest selves. He wanted the students to feel free creatively. He wanted them to connect with, you know, their own values and the things that were important to them. And that was his focus. Leave the children alone and trust that they will come to the wisdom on their own if as a teacher you simply set up an environment in which that kind of learning can take place. Well, eventually the school failed. And I'm not sure it's because of the philosophy necessarily, because other educators after Tolstoy have had similar philosophies and have done so successfully. But I think that it failed for a more trivial reason, that Tolstoy was not a good administrator. He was not, that was not one of his talents. He was an inspiring teacher, an interesting teacher. The peasant children did not want to leave the school at the end of the day. But he wasn't a great administrator. And the other thing I will say is the government was concerned about this school. They wanted to shut it down. They were putting a lot of pressure on him because they thought Tolstoy was planting revolutionary ideas into his young peasant children, students. And in some ways, he was. He was teaching them to think for themselves, which was fairly revolutionary in Russia at that time. So eventually the school failed, and we can be thankful for that in one sense, because that's why he returned to War and Peace, because had the school been successful, I'm afraid Tolstoy would have followed what he thought was his true calling, which was as a teacher.
The novel was originally published in as a series in the newspaper, which, I mean, we think about that now. That seems really odd, but that was actually quite common in that time, was it not? And why was it published that way instead of you finish the book and you bring it to somebody and they print it for you?
So War and Peace was, you're correct in saying that most of the Russian novels and most literature, almost all of the literature, was initially published in installment form in what I would call a literary journal, something like, you know, the New Yorker or the Atlantic, but dealing with an even wider range of issues. And that's how War and Peace was published. And then after it had been published in serial form, then it was then republished as a single book in six volumes in 1869, and all the novels were published like in that way back then, and that was just tradition. That was how readers got to know the writers. They would read one installment, and then 3 months later, they would read the next installment. And so Tolstoy had to keep readers' interest. All the writers had to keep readers' interest because readers, that's how readers were reading. And if they lost interest after one of the installments, they weren't going to, you know, continue to read your book. And interestingly, a little factoid that your listeners may appreciate is that in 1866, when Tolstoy was working on and publishing War and Peace, War and Peace was coming out in a literary journal called the Russian Herald. Readers at that time could read two books being published at the same time in the Russian Herald. One of them was called War and Peace, or at that time it had a different title. It was called War. And another book by a writer by the name of Fyodor Dostoevsky called Crime and Punishment. So imagine being a reader in 1866 and a subscriber to that literary journal and having War and Peace and Crime and Punishment side by side in your installments.
Wow. Yeah, that would perhaps people at the time didn't realize how good they had it. So you mentioned the title of this. It went through quite a few iterations. Where did the eventual title come from?
Like everything in this book, the title went through many different iterations. Five different titles Tolstoy attempted. One of them, by the way, was called All's Well That Ends Well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So Tolstoy was not above ripping off the titles of other great writers. And I don't think titles were copyrighted back then in the same way that I don't think they're copyrighted today. But the eventual title, War and Peace, is actually the translation of a book that had been written by a French social thinker by the name of Joseph Proudhon, whom Tolstoy had met. And he wrote a tome about war, about society, about economy, called La Guerre et le Pays, which is French for War and Peace. And Tolstoy was so taken by that title that he decided to lift it for his own book. And that was the title that he finally settled on.
800-642-1234 is the number to call to join the program. 800-642-1234. Rod is with us in Madison. Rod, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I really, really enjoyed War and Peace. I read it after college, I think in 1976 or something. I was initially drawn to it because I'm interested in Napoleonic history. And even dragged my first wife to see the 8-hour Soviet movie, and then went 100 miles 10 years later to see that Soviet movie over again. Quick question. In War and Peace, Tolstoy keeps kind of emphasizing his idea that history is not controlled to any degree whatsoever by great men. He says that Napoleon is just a it just thinks that he's controlling these events, and I was always interested in why Tolstoy got that notion, and what you think about that.
Thanks. It's a great question, Rod. So one of the many motivations for writing War and Peace was to retell history in a way that Tolstoy thought was more truthful. He had read many history books, nearly 300, in fact, in preparation for writing War and Peace, about that great era of the Napoleonic Wars in Russia. And the mistake he thought all of them made is that they told history from the point of view of the great men. But history doesn't work that way. History is much richer, much more unpredictable, and no single human being, even a czar or an emperor like Napoleon, determines the fate of countries or history. It's a conglomeration of different forces and factors. And Tolstoy wanted to write a truthful history that incorporates all of those different factors that he thought were the real driving forces of history, which is, and you're absolutely right to say that he is very critical of Napoleon. In fact, Napoleon is one of the most character that Tolstoy is the closest thing to a villain in War and Peace, because Napoleon is arrogant and self-aggrandizing, and he and everyone that has supported him thinks, you know, that he holds half the world in his power. And at that time, it seemed that he did, but when he invaded Russia, that cost him his army and eventually Napoleonic France. His army was destroyed on the long walk out of Russia. So in some ways, War and Peace is a cautionary tale about the dangers of ambition. And it's also, Tolstoy is making his point that history is not about the great people. It's about all of us.
Rod, thanks so much for that call. So there was an 8-hour film version of this book. That seems like I was just trying to imagine writing the screenplay for that.
The 8-hour version I think Rod was referring to is the Bondarchuk. Bondarchuk was a Soviet director. The Bondarchuk version of War and Peace, which in my view is the greatest of all of the adaptations, because it's the most faithful to the text. And Bondarchuk was also creating this film for a Soviet society who knew this novel inside and out. So he held himself to a very high standard. He knew he had to get it right, and he had to be faithful to the text. And I highly recommend that adaptation of the novel.
All right, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's the number to call to join the discussion here today. So you break this. Well, let me ask you this before we go into this, some of the specifics that of the things that you brought up here in your book. What was your purpose when you set out to write this? What was it you were trying to accomplish?
Very simply, I can't tell you how many people and students and readers and book club members and people I've talked to over the years who've said, I've tried to read War and Peace. I couldn't get through past the first 50 pages, or, you know, I wouldn't dare attempt War and Peace. So it has this aura of a very intimidating, massive classic of world literature. And I just simply wanted to bring that book down to a very human, relatable level and offer a guide to readers that would be accessible and enjoyable to them, that they could use either while reading the novel, before they read the novel, after they read the novel, or even if they choose not to read the novel, everything that you need to know for the cocktail party, as I sometimes like to joke, is in my book. So it was really, I wanted to offer a guide to the novel that everyone could relate to. But on a deeper level, I also wanted to offer a guide to the wisdom, the incredible life wisdom that Tolstoy offers in this book on a wide range of topics. In fact, there are 12 themes that I focus on, and those are the titles of each of the chapters: plans, imagination, rupture, success, idealism, happiness, love, family, courage, death, perseverance, and truth. And I take readers through the novel and help them to appreciate the wisdom that Tolstoy is offering on each of those different topics as they're working through the stories of these characters.
Here's a comment from James on Facebook I think that might be helpful for our listeners. James writes, he recommends listening to War and Peace as an audiobook to encourage people to engage with Tolstoy. He says, listen to it every day on your commute, or if you have a summer road trip coming up, listen to it while you drive. That might be an easier way for some people to get through the book if someone else was doing the reading.
It's a wonderful idea, and I would certainly encourage it as an add-on to the reading of the novel. But remember that the book was also written to be read. And so while I think reading it or listening to it can give you a dimension that is unique and will illuminate various aspects of the novel that maybe you wouldn't have caught while reading it, I also think you need to read it because that was Tolstoy's intention, and experience the delicious prose and the delicious descriptions in this book. And I've talked to many people who've said that when they read this book, it was a journey. It was an experience that they were different people at the end of that journey than they were at the beginning. It was a transformative experience for them.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Tolstoy, you say, was really great at making rules. He wrote lots and lots of them, rules for living and for every aspect of life. How was he at keeping those rules?
He was disastrous at keeping those rules, and that's something that I discuss in the chapter called Plans. I think that's something that we can all relate to. You know, we have our plans, our ideas about where we want to go in our lives, but life has a way of interfering and reminding us that I think Tolstoy's idea about plans and about rules is best described in a quote, interestingly, by American General Eisenhower, who said, quote, that plans in battle, I find that plans are useless, but planning is essential. And that is one of the core nuggets of wisdom that Tolstoy offers in War and Peace as well, about the importance of plans, but also the futility of them.
Well, and I think Eisenhower may have been channeling Clausewitz, who I think wrote, no plan survives the first day of battle. you have, the fog of war, and you can make all the plans you want, but once the bullets start flying, everything tends to change in a hurry. And you have a number of illustrations in the chapter on plans of how that actually works in a military setting.
And in life, John. I mean, and in life as well. So it's also true in the peace sections of the novel, where the characters that have really tried to hold very rigidly to their plans and their ideas end up being frustrated because life doesn't work that way.
So the message here is we all need to be adaptable and be able to roll with the punches, so to speak. Bad things are going to happen. You need to just be able to figure a way to get through them.
That's certainly one of the messages. And I think the other message that Tolstoy offers us is the importance of living in the now, being present with every moment, with the person that you're with the moment that you find yourself in right now is the most important moment. And he teaches us to relish those moments, there's almost a Buddhist quality in his view of life. This ability to be present with what is and not try to overstep it, not try and keep focused on that and appreciate it.
800-642-1234. We're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to hear about the Books Behind Bars program. You take Russian literature to a juvenile correction facility. I want to hear about that, and I'm sure our listeners will want to hear about it, too. We've got some callers on the line, so lots more to do here in the next 18 minutes or so. You're listening to The Kathleen Dunn Show. I'm John Munson. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about War and Peace with the author of Give War and Peace a Chance, Tolstoyan Wisdom for Troubled Times. Andrew Kaufman is my guest. He's the author of that work, and he's also the creator of something called the Books Behind Bars program. And Dr. Kaufman, where did that program come from? Where did you get the idea to do that program? How does it work, and how has it worked out so far?
Well, the Books Behind Bars program is it's actually a course that I teach at the University of Virginia, in which my undergraduate students go into a juvenile correctional center once a week, and they lead book discussions about short classics of Russian literature, including Tolstoy, with incarcerated youth. These meetings go on for 10 weeks a semester, and I started this 5 years ago in 2010, and it has proven to be a transformative experience for both groups, both the UVA students and also the incarcerated youth. And the idea came from Tolstoy had a very strong hand in the creation of this program, because I was invited to teach a class in a prison about Tolstoy's story, The Death of Ivan Ilyich, which is about a middle-aged guy who contracts a fatal illness. I was invited to teach a class about that story in a prison, and I had no idea what to expect. This was back in 2009, and it turned out to be one of the most transformative teaching experiences, one of the most powerful classroom experiences of my life, in which not only these men learned some, you know, valuable things, and they talked about decisions that they have made in their own lives, and they shared experiences that they've had with death and opportunities that they've squandered or perhaps never had. And all of a sudden, Russian literature becomes a conversation about Russian literature, becomes a conversation about real life. And I thought, wow, if this kind of a class could have such an impact on me as a teacher, on helping me to think more deeply and differently about Tolstoy and Russian literature, what kind of an impact would it have on my students? So that was the idea for creating a course in which my students would end up doing something very similar. They go into a juvenile correctional center. And together they're discovering with the incarcerated youth how a writer like Tolstoy is much more than words on a page. It's much more than an artifact or a relic. Tolstoy is alive, and his words speak to us today, and many of the students have discovered kind of life lessons and wisdom through their reading of Tolstoy in this group with the incarcerated youth and the UVA students.
Do you have any specific examples that you can share of that? The things that people learned or that they pointed out that, wow, this really applies to me, or here's a similarity in my life?
Well, one example that comes to mind, actually an example not from Tolstoy, but from a poem by a poet, Russian poet by the name of Lermontov, called Native Land, a poem in which he celebrates the little details, the little ordinary details about his country that he misses because he wrote this poem when he was in exile. Well, one of the incarcerated youth responded very powerfully to that poem, and he said it made him think about all the things that he misses about his home life now that he is incarcerated, being able to wear his own shoes, being able to go to the refrigerator and get out, you know, a can of soda, those silly little conversations that he, you know, always took for granted, conversations with his parents or his sister. And so he resonated very powerfully with the vision of Lermontov.
Go ahead.
Well, one other example that I think from a famous Russian novel, Crime and Punishment, is the moment when Raskolnikov, the young murderer, confesses to Sonia his crime, that he's committed a double homicide. And he's expecting Sonia, and Sonia is a prostitute who has supported him up to this point, one of the few people who has supported him. But he expects her to reject him after she hears what he's done. But she doesn't do that. She listens to him and she pities him. And one of the residents, one of the incarcerated youth said, you know, where's my Sonia? Where's the person who will hear the worst of what I've done and still love me and still listen to me? So lessons like that, very powerful personal lessons that the incarcerated youth are gaining from their conversations about the classics of Russian literature.
Let's take another phone call. This time we'll go to Kurt in Chippewa Falls. Kurt, hello.
Hello, thank you. Spasibo. Two questions and then a comment. Well, a comment first. I think you are showing that there was a time and a culture in which serious writing was intended to to display, to discuss big things, not merely to entertain, which seems to me to have taken over the publishing industry in at least fiction work in the modern 21st century. But apart from that, in which language did Tolstoy write War and Peace first? And is it true, I understand, that in the last stage of his life, he despised all of his works and tried to get them off the shelves? Is that true?
So thank you for the question. In response to the first part of your question, Tolstoy wrote War and Peace in Russian primarily, but he also, as I mentioned earlier, wrote about 2.5% of this book in French, because that's the language that the aristocracy spoke at that time, and he wanted it to be a realistic novel. And he spoke French at home as well. He was an aristocrat, so his French was perfect. It was fluent. But primarily War and Peace was originally written in Russian, and it's a novel ultimately to celebrate Russian Russian national consciousness, separating itself from the French who had dominated high society for over a century. And then in response to your second question, yes, Tolstoy went through a major crisis after he wrote War and Peace and Anna Karenina a decade later. He called War and Peace verbose gibberish, which is kind of interesting. War and Peace, verbose gibberish. And he rejected Anna Karenina as aristocratic indulgence. He said he thought at that time that an artist's goal should be to write moral tracts, to teach people moral lessons, which for him boiled down to the lessons in the Gospels. And so he started writing religious essays and religious tales that were very different in their spirit from War and Peace and Anna Karenina. And then he finally returned to being an artist at the end of his life, but he went through a long 25-year period where he rejected himself as a pure artist.
Thanks so much for that call. Let's go next to Jerome in Mequon. Jerome, thanks for being here today. Hello, Jerome.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Go ahead.
I'm calling because, as most people feel, reading something like War and Peace is initially a very difficult assignment, and now you're going to go to the prison. I was thinking of a way to make it an easier assignment. You have the novels burdened with these very difficult and confusing Russian names, and I would think that it would be much easier for the English version if you used Anglo-Saxon names in there.
All right, Jerome. Thanks for the question. So, Andrew Kaufman, what do you think for the non-Russian speaking portion? Should we change the names?
Well, I think the first thing we should do is give War and Peace a chance, because I have a guide to pronouncing the characters' names and who they are in my appendix. I think that serves a purpose. But what I have found, even with the incarcerated youth, is that, once they kind of learn how these names work and what the system is, they get the hang of it. And it's kind of cool to read the names as they were in the original Russian. It gives you a flavor of Russia. I would vote for keeping the names as they are and helping people understand kind of how you can organize all these different names. And part of the challenge is that characters go by different names. Some characters are called by their diminutive, some are called by their first name, by their middle name. But there's a method to the madness, which I describe, I break down in my book.
800-642-1234, talk at WPR.org, or find the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page and leave a comment or question there. We're talking about the book Give War and Peace a Chance, Tolstoyan Wisdom for Troubled Times. Andrew Kaufman is my guest. This book, when we look through it, and you've broken it down by, it's almost like looking at a list of virtues, What does War and Peace have to teach us about happiness, for example?
I think to boil it down into its simplest message, I think what Tolstoy is saying is that happiness is not about getting what you think you want. It's about learning to see the value and the beauty in what you do have, no matter what circumstances you happen to find yourself in. And a wonderful example of this comes later in the novel when Pierre Bezukhov, one of the heroes, is a prisoner of war. He's just witnessed an execution. He's thrown into a dark shed. His world has utterly cracked and crumbled, and he's lost his faith in life, in humanity, in God. And in that moment, a man who's sitting next to him in the shed, a wise old peasant by the name of Platon Karatayev, gives him some potatoes. And those are the most delicious potatoes Pierre has ever tasted in his life. And I think the message of that scene is that, you know, opportunities for happiness are all around us, no matter what circumstances we happen to find ourselves in. And it is often in the most difficult times that we learn to appreciate the smallest things. Pierre never would have enjoyed those potatoes previously in the way that he did in that moment when they were handed to him in a simple act of human kindness. And that was the beginning. Those potatoes in that moment of joy of eating the potatoes was actually the beginning of his rebirth. And that for Tolstoy is happiness. That's one kind of happiness. It doesn't have to be grand or superlative. It can be very simple and very powerful.
Well, now, I plan to accept your challenge to read War and Peace, which I managed to survive 60 years on the planet plus without having read it, but I'm going to take your challenge and try to read it. Now, what I would like from you is some advice on how to attack this novel as a reader, and I don't use attack in the violent sense, but how to approach it in a way that would be helpful. So for somebody who's never read this book, and you look at it, and, okay, 1,500 pages doesn't scare me so much. I've read long books many times, and so that doesn't bother me. 600 characters, that seems like a lot to keep track of. It would be easy to get lost. So what advice would you have for me as I pick this book up and start reading it?
So the first advice I would have for you is find a group. Find one other person, five other people, 10 other people, because there are many people like you out there that want to read War and Peace and don't quite know how to start and are a little terrified. And I have found that reading it in a group really eases the experience. And so that's the first thing that I would do. The second thing I would do is go out and get a copy of Give War and Peace a Chance.
I happen to have one in front of me, so I can check that off my list right now.
Okay. And some people have found that reading that first really kind of greases the wheels and eases their way into the novel and really gives them a context and a way to enjoy it and appreciate it. In terms of the characters, there are lists of characters out there. There are character lists that can help you keep those names straight, and I have one in my book as well. But once you get the main families down, and remember there are five major families. There may be 600 characters, but there are only five major families that are the focus of this book. And once you identify those, and you will do that fairly quickly, and you identify the two or three people who are the key people, you know, the heroes in the novel from those families, then all of a sudden you have a path through the novel that you can latch on to, and it will make your reading experience. And then you can take all the detours, you can learn about the other characters and all these other things that happen along the journey, but you'll at least have a skeleton on which you can hang. You'll have a backbone for your journey that will make you feel grounded and feel like you're paying attention to kind of the key people, and you're getting to know them and focus on them and developing a relationship with them.
Well, I think that's a great place to leave it. I promise to post my progress as I work my way through this on Facebook so everybody can keep up. And that'll hold me to it. Thank you so much, Andrew Kaufman, for spending this hour with me today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it, too.
Again, the book is Give War and Peace a Chance, Tolstoyan Wisdom for Troubled Times. Andrew Kaufman, the author, Simon & Schuster, the publisher. This program was produced by K.P. Whaley, with on-air production by Jennifer Dargan and Dave Potratz. Appreciate all their help this afternoon and yours for listening. So it's Tolstoy 1 hour and poetry the next. Stick around after the news. We're going to come back and talk about why poetry matters today, even though nobody buys it. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stay tuned.